Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Well, hello, everybody. Hey. Welcome. Hey. Well, as you can see, if you're tuning in, you're a regular viewer, watcher of the live stream or the replay, Oliver is in the first seat, not to signify anything in particular, because he is as much a co-host as possible and has run things many times. But when you press different buttons, you get different results. And Oliver is on the left and I'm on the right, which is fun. Can be a good sign. Welcome to episode 26 of Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt. Mr. Katt, I know that you have really, really big news from last Wednesday, something you shared with me on WhatsApp, and I'd like for you to share it with the audience and what's super exciting and groundbreaking in your life since last Wednesday.
Okay, so this is a very big announcement, ladies and gentlemen. This is the thing that everybody has been waiting for. Can you hear that? No, neither can I. The fire alarm, the smoke detector has been changed. There is no longer a dead battery up there that is beeping. Yes, we can celebrate. The time is here. Thank you very much. It's done.
Congratulations. Now I just want to have somebody edit in that chirp in the like replays and the podcast just for old time's sake, you know, just now I miss it. Now it's weird because it's not there. If anyone's tuning in for the first time, Mr. Oliver lives on a small tropical island with supply chain issues and had a chirping smoke alarm in the background for, I don't know, last month or so. Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, look, we can put it down to a month, and I'll be honest with you, we've had no 9-volt batteries at all for a month. I think everybody obviously changed their batteries at the same time last time, so we all ran out of power at the same time. And look, I'd rather have a beeping battery in there that can still pick up the beeping than have no battery at all. So that's the biggie. But the other big one is we're changing things up today, aren't we, Jason?
We are. We're going to mix it up because we've gone through a lot of topics. We've covered a lot of aspects, nearly all the aspects that we have on a list of running a successful call center and having the confidence to be a leader and to scale your team, your operation, whatever it looks like, sales, service. And we're going to throw something out different this time. What we're going to do is I got inspiration of like, what should a sales operations leader mean? Now, I think we should talk about what a sales ops leader is versus a sales leader or sales manager. And then I thought, okay, what about a list of things they should know? And funny enough, thanks to the internets, there's a bunch of articles about that or a bunch of lists, and some of it's helping people get ready for job interviews. But I found one that I thought was very interesting, which if anyone wants the source of this, just leave a chat, leave a message, or send us an email, and I can give you the link for where this came from. I thought we would go through these 10 questions sales ops leaders need to know the answers to, and try to throw our input on there as well. How's that sound, Oliver?
Hey, look, I love it. I think it's great. I think one of the big ones out of this is so many people ask these questions on a daily basis, not necessarily to us, but to other businesses worldwide. We hear about them. We see them. We've even had the questions asked to us at times. So we thought it was going to be a great idea to really kind of knuckle down, get into the middle of this, answer these questions. And if you've got any questions or derivatives of that question or anything else that kind of sits within that remit, pop it in the chat, let us know, put it in the conversation, because we will do our best to pick that up and either answer it or at least come back to you next week if we don't know the answer. Not to say we don't know the answer to everything, because we don't, but we want to show that we can be as knowledgeable as possible, right?
Yeah, and as we're going through this, something I posted on LinkedIn earlier today is, as we're going through this, what are your answers? What are your thoughts on these specific topics and these things we're going to, you know, kind of pull the pin of the this grenade for each question and see where it goes. What do you have for your answers? What do you think? What would you say? Put that in the comments. Also say hello. We always love knowing who's watching, who's tuning in live, even on the replays, whether it's Facebook, it's LinkedIn, it's YouTube. Also, if you're not, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Call Center Confidence on Instagram. I just went live. Oliver tuned in, jumped in, and we said hi on my stream. So make sure you do that. We're going to try to do some fun things there for people who are tuned in, and not just weekly, just throughout the week. We'll just see what happens. So
let's mix it up. Let's go crazy.
This is the 26th episode, not the 26th week, because we skipped a couple. And so let's just keep evolving and keep getting better as we get our call center live confidence going, then we're good, right?
100%. 100%. All right. So look, I think we need to dive into question number one.
Let's do it.
And I think it's one of the biggest questions that a lot of people are asking these days. And I think it's one of those questions where people are actually either on the money with this or they are not on the money with it at all. We're going to put the question up. You're going to see it. It's going to come up on the screen in just a few moments so we can talk about it. But the first question that has come up in this conversation, in this topic, is, as a sales ops leader, are my strategies aligned with top level company objectives? Now, first and foremost, this is something we have skirted around. We have toyed back and forth with when it comes to KPIs, when it comes to directives, when it comes to making sure that everybody is on the same page. But this one is a valid, straight to the point question. What are the big ones? Jason, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously for these questions, the answers are usually yes. Like some of them are my strategies aligned? The answer is really simple, which is yes. I think, though, where this can be a challenge for people in a sales role or for many departments is the siloed parts that we've talked about before, which is somebody is looking at their own metrics, their own numbers, their own business unit, and playing their own game, trying to win their own game, trying to survive at their own game within their department, and not necessarily align. So, obviously, this is easy. The answer is yes, or it should be yes. And if it's not yes, then there should be that should indicate a problem. But really, it's about aligning that. And we've talked about this a lot where organizations to succeed, the organization matters, the company matters, the customer matters throughout their life cycle from marketing and branding through, service and onboarding, whatever it looks like. And then the departments are just there to help move things forward, not to be on their own. And I think when it comes to sales, a lot of times sales is so focused on the success within sales, the KPIs and the numbers within sales, is that they're not necessarily worried or thinking about all of the business metrics for everyone mm-hmm. to succeed. For you, Oliver, when you think about this, because obviously I know your answer is yes, or it should be, better be. it better be. Why do you think it might not be aligned with other metrics, or what part is sales focused on? Let's put it this way. What part is sales focused on? Sales ops leaders might be focused on for themselves and to the detriment of the company.
Look, I want to talk about that detriment piece and where the misalignment really comes in sometimes. And I think it's important to be aware when that happens. And the reason for that is because I've worked with companies over the years, I wouldn't say recently, I've been involved with some recently that do this, but not to an extent where it's a problem. But the focus of the sales team is to stick as many sales on the board as possible. And yes, ultimately that is the company goal because they want to put sales on the board because they want to generate revenue. But what happens is there is for example, a cooling off period in the sale. Now, the sales team are targeted on X number of sales per day, per month, per year, per quarter, whatever it might be. So in actual fact, do the sales team really care if that sale goes live once they put it in the funnel? Yep, customers agreed to it. Thank you very much. Done. Now, granted, they're not going to get paid on it if the customer falls off after the sales process has been agreed to, especially if there's a cooling off period. But the business sees these falsified numbers coming through on the sales funnel. And ultimately, the goal is, look, we want to see quality versus quantity. And I think for me, that is one of the biggest things that stands out, especially when there is misalignment. And it is, don't just stick sales in because your numbers look good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to get paid on it because it's not going through. But at the end of the day, now you're putting crap in the funnel, so to speak. And you're clogging it up with sales that are false numbers. That's what I see a bit of that stands out to me. I don't know if you've witnessed that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and not to just pick on sales, because this happens in every department, and I've seen this, but it's more likely to happen in sales, which is the short-term thinking, the what do I need to do to win in this moment, not thinking about the overall business success, not thinking about the overall client success. There are times, definitely, where salespeople will close deals that don't make sense for the business or that won't stay very long as clients, where they're going to cancel, they're going to complain, they're going to have issues. They were oversold, they were overpromised. Key details were ignored and left out so that the person is now surprised once they become a client with what they just bought. And then that just harms everybody. And it's really overcoming that self-centered short-term thinking and be like, okay, playing from a place of abundance, which is, what do we have to do to help the company and the customers, the right people, and then do that at scale instead of worrying about closing this single deal that might end up being a bad one. And so I think that's the key, right? Is that once you do that and shift, which is how do we make the most profitable sales in the moment, short-term and long-term from a lifetime value standpoint, right? Yeah. So it's not just about getting someone in the boat, right? It's about getting someone in the boat and they stay in the boat and they're a part of your company's ecosystem for as long as possible. And when you align those things, like you said, which is retention, which is lifetime value, when you put those kind of metrics on the sales ops, so it's not just in the moment, but it's long-term or longer-term focused, now everybody is focusing on the same things.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, focus is the key. Communication is also another key to this. Because the fact is, if you're not on the same line, if you're not on the same page, if you're not talking about it, if you're not communicating about it, then you will seriously get some misalignment off the back of that. And that's something that nobody wants. Nobody wants to see. Nobody wants to witness. But at the same time as well, I also think it's on the company directors, the VPs, the C-suites, to make sure that those objectives are actually filtered down. You know, you might have this goal or this vision at the top, but unless you pass that down to your team, they're not on that train. They're not going to see that. And I think that's also one of the big things that's missing these days is they have all these great ideas, but they don't share it with the team. I witnessed a client recently, and I think we spoke about this when we spoke about, you know, introduction of tech stack and things like that, where I've witnessed senior members of the team, you know, demoing products, demoing tech stack, looking at what they've got in front of them, but they're not getting people on board. They're not telling people why we're doing this or setting their expectations. And it's not also about, you know, so we don't have to say, I want to run this past you to get your thoughts or you know, your ideas on if this works. But I think that the key to this is making sure that they're at least understanding why you're looking to implement something or change something or add a metric or add a, you know, a KPI or whatever that might be, because then you will start to get people's buy-in. You will start to have people aligned with your thoughts, your vision, your journey. And I think at that point, you can start to pivot in the right direction.
Yeah. And I think one other word that comes to mind when I think about this and the challenges where a business unit is playing their game and not for the whole team's success is trust, is trusting that if you're doing what you need to do for the long-term success of the company, that others are doing that and that somebody higher up, like you said, is aligning everyone together. Because one of the things that gets in the way of this is the politics, the bureaucracy, the backstabbing, the everyone else is looking for themselves and undermining somebody. And then that erodes the trust and then people kind of retreat to their own control and what they can control and their success. So I think it's all about a trusting corporate culture supported from the top down.
Yes, exactly. 100%. 100%. And that is it. It does start at the top. I think people sometimes forget that. And I think even sometimes people at the top forget it starts with them on that journey. But yeah, I couldn't have said that better myself. I think that's a great point. Is there anything else in this kind of one question? Because look, yeah, we spent 10 minutes on this question. Look, you know as well as I do, when Jason and I get going on something like this, we're involved all the way through. So that's a biggie. That's a good one.
And we will make sure this isn't a 5-part episode. Here's the thing that helps a lot is if we segue into question number 2, which is how aligned are your departments? It's what we just touched on. So we went kind of in this transition of the strategic alignment and then aligned are your departments in the company across everything. And if you're in charge of sales operations, right? So we talked about the umbrella, but let's talk about sales ops or revenue ops, which means more than just sales a lot of times, where it's the operations of the sales. So sometimes I see in companies where they have a, like a VP of rev ops or a chief revenue officer, it's marketing, it's sales, sometimes it's retention, sometimes it's customer service. It's anything that is dealing with a client who is going to pay money, and it's everything that falls under that umbrella. Now, for me, what I've seen to be successful is that person at the top is managing all of those and in charge of it, and then they will bring alignment to those various sub departments for that one goal. It's when there's different leaders of all those different groups, it might not be aligned.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think when it comes to something about alignment, is it has to, and I know this is the simple answer of it, it has to align across everybody. Made me laugh about it, but the fact is some people don't see it. They talk about it, but they exclude themselves from it. Again, I've seen it time and time again where people go, yeah, we're gonna do this, and they're gonna go and do that. Okay, so you're involved in this. Why are you not on that, aligned with them? Well, they can deal with it on their own. No, they can't. The fact is, when you're part of that team, when you're part of that process, it's involving every single member of the team. Do some people think they're above it? I mean, those of you out there that are listening in, do you think, when you kind of push this out, do you think you stand out from the rest of the crowd? I don't know. I mean, I've witnessed it a few times. What about you?
Yeah, for sure. It's like they think they're aligned, or a lot of times in public, everyone says they're aligned, and then behind closed doors, then it's a totally different game.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think you just said it right. It's a totally different game. Everybody has to be playing on the same field. And that's it. It's not a different game. A client of mine, I can give you a prime example. A client of mine we're working very, very close, very tight partnership with. And one of the issues is half of the business isn't open to my client, even though they've signed a partnership deal, they don't have access to other things that they need. And it says a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think because when you're a company and you do sign an agreement, or you do sign a partnership with somebody that, you do let them in the door, you do give them access to things that they wouldn't normally have. But at the same time, if you want them to do what you do, or, as we said in the outsourcing, if you want them to lift a process and move it somewhere, then in that team, everybody's got to be working together. Everybody's got to be at the same point in time, agreeing on the same stuff. And if you don't have that, it just puts everybody on the back foot. And you want your sales team to deliver, but you're not giving them every piece of information. To put it in a really self-explanatory way, you want them to sell a product, but you don't give them the price that you can sell the product for. So when they're speaking to their customers, it's like, oh, I'll have to come back to you. You're putting a roadblock that doesn't need to be there because you're withholding something. Now, I'm not saying it is price. I'm saying it could be anything, but it's something as simple as that, which stops things from happening.
Yeah. And again, when I hear you talk about that, and I know examples on my end as well, I go back to the trust word. Right. It's I don't trust you yet. I'm not going to let you know everything behind the magic curtain. And then you know, so I'm going to hold you back. And of course, that's the same thing if you're in sales and you're trying to sell somebody and they're not giving you all the info or they're putting up some roadblocks, it's because they don't trust you yet, right? It's that same kind of stuff. I know there's a couple of comments that just came through. Alex, nice to hear from you. He says, I agree sales executives should be looking at customer retention, CSAT, CX. They should also be looking at their failed sales rate and the reasons for a failed sales, which is a great segue into the next question. Paul also put something here on LinkedIn. Paul, good to hear from you as well. To give a business a direction, it needs to be a simple aspirational target statement. NASA put a man on the moon. Microsoft, a computer on every desk in every home. Simple, clear, effective statement. And then everyone knows, right? Then that's the guiding light. It's the stuff we talked about in the mission, vision, core values part of company culture. All right, so let's dive into number three. So number three, which is a good segue from Alex, comment, which is how well do you know how your salespeople are actually selling? Now, the short answer, the right answer is very well. The actual answer in reality for most sales operation leaders, sales leaders, managers, directors, VP of sales, I'm going to guess is not very well. Or I have a bunch of thoughts on this when it comes to the metrics and what's actually being watched. What do you think, or how would, let's look at it this way. How would somebody in a sales op leadership role prepare themselves to be able to answer this in the definite affirmative?
Sorry, I literally lost you for the last 10 seconds of that question. Say that again for me.
I said, so how would you prepare a sales leader? What would you tell them they need to know or do to be able to answer this in the affirmative?
Okay, look. I think you can take a lot of information. It's a lot of companies have too much information when it comes to this, but as long as you've got the raw stats, the raw data that you need as a business, what is going to eventually determine your success model? So revenue, sales per day, sales per hour, sales per week, sales per month, whatever you as a business decide is your main KPIs, your main targets, that, I know this is stating the obvious, that is what you need in front of you on a regular basis. The one thing I will say is when you are looking at this metric, don't make it so that it is stupidly unachievable. And what I mean by that is I worked with a client a couple of years ago that would literally watch the sales board all day. That was it. They would sit in front of that board from 9 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, watching the sales come in. And in that instance, would compare said sales to the same day last year. Now, the biggest problem that I see for that, and don't get me wrong, it's great because you can always compare apples for apples, whether it was coming up to a public holiday or coming up to a, you know, a Christmas period or a busy time or something like that. You could look at that. But the problem you've got is when you're looking at those numbers, and let's say, for example, I'm 20 down today versus this same day last year. And they're going, well, why is that? Why are we 20 down? Well, I don't know. I can't give you that. If you give me till the end of the day, we may have a spike at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We may have a spike at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know. And I think when you manage numbers like that too tightly, then it can lead down a very dark, fiery path. So for me, to understand if your salespeople are actually selling, is what I would say to them is determine the metric. Determine the length of time to measure that metric, what is achievable, what is viable, and what you can take into consideration. And then look at it from an overall perspective. Look at it from top down. So, for example, first of the month to the last of the month, you know what you did September last year. You can look at that and you can say, okay, year to date, month to date, or whatever it was versus last year. Don't look at, okay, I'll give you an example. This is probably a good one for the American side, right? Here we go. So you look at, for example, Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving this year is on a totally different day than it was last year, right? So if you're looking at stats for stats, and let's say, for example, this, what day is it on this year? I don't even know. Is it on like a Friday? It's a weekend, right? No, yeah. I have no idea.
Next
I haven't
got Thursday, my calendar in front of me. 25th.
Next Thursday. Right. Okay. But if I'm looking at that, for example, but then I'm comparing it, I know obviously Black Fridays and things like that, but if I'm looking at the date value, because obviously where it falls versus the actual date, okay, if I'm working on that day, last year it was a completely different day. It wasn't the public holiday. It wasn't Black Friday. It was a different day of the week. Or sorry, date of the week, not versus day of the week. So if I'm comparing, my numbers are going to be skewed because who's going to buy this product on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, and I that makes total sense because you have to use relative dates like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and then compare that result to the Wednesday of Thanksgiving the previous year. But I think your point is even more valuable, which is looking at that one number. In my experience, what I've seen is sales managers who used to be salespeople end up looking at the one metric that mattered as a salesperson, which is the number of sales you did. Yeah. How many sales did I do today? How many do it? You know, that person who's watching that board, like you're talking about in the example, every time I've seen that focus on one metric, which is the number of marks on the whiteboard, and they're looking at the sale, then that's coming from a salesperson perspective, which is not looking at the whole business strategy, the whole business unit. For me, what I have found whenever I confronted with them, I say, how did we do today? Oh, well, we closed 45 sales. Okay, is that good or not? Well, yesterday we did 40, so it's better. Is it? How many calls did you have? How many sales reps did you have? If you had twice as many reps show up today and you had four times as many calls and you closed five more deals, you suck.
Yep.
Like we have a problem. We actually have a problem. And so, but like a lot of times sales leaders say, oh, well, we did this or the magical closing percentage. Oh, well, our closing percentage was good today. Here's what it was. Relative to what? And how are you calculating that? Like, how did you arrive at this magical closing percentage? And if you run a campaign that has, or a call center that has different inbound campaigns, direct mail versus a Facebook lead, those are significantly different costs. So what closing percentage? Because you could be winning or losing. And so for me, I look at key metrics, which is cost per acquisition, which factors in the closing percentage and the cost per lead. And then, you know, deals per rep, sales per rep per day, because now we're looking at numbers that adjust based on that. So, and I think that's really the key. That's the part is not just looking at one metric, but you have to look at very important critical metrics. And then, you know, things like retention, which is what Alex had put in earlier. And then, you know, Paul is saying too, that the metrics, you know, not just the current values, but trends and challenges, you know, there's a lot of different things. And again, a lot of times what we're saying here is we see sales leaders who look at a very basic top level, big number. Here's what we did. Here's what the CRM shows. We closed this many deals today. We either won or we didn't. Right. And I've had that conversation with many CEOs. It's like, well, how do we do today? We closed 45. That's great. No, it's not. Like, no, we actually lost. So,
yeah. And I think that's it. When you factor in things like agent head to sales ratio, productivity on the phone, average handling time, they all generate down to one number. And that's it. And I think it's important that everything boils down to a number. Look, you've heard me say it time and time again. Many managers say this, many leaders say this, is the fact is if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And the same way is you've got to have your board, you've got to have your graph to say, hey, we're heading in the right direction. And your analogy was perfect. Yesterday you closed 40, but today you closed 45, but you had double the sales team. Actually, that was a bad day.
Really bad. Yeah.
And that's a point that you can hit home with. And I think, you know, that's when you start to then see gaps in your data. And that kind of moves into question number four, really, is are there gaps in your process or cliffs in your data? And I think that goes to show a great step in how we measure this, how we look at this. Because ultimately, if you do have gaps, you may be looking at the wrong thing. I know I won't mention names or companies, but I remember there was a company that I worked with a very long time ago that somebody watching may remember this time because I know I think they were involved in it or were there for it. Is where everything looked great. Productivity looked great. Agents were doing well. Sales were coming in. Everybody was showing a great productive day at the end of every single day. But in actual fact, the agents found a way to fudge the figures and were actually committing fraud. And then all of a sudden, there was a big mass culling of these people and they disappeared out of the business very, very quickly. But at the end of the day, is the data didn't lie. But... Yeah. There was a gap in the process.
Yeah. And one of the biggest keys that I've learned, and I heard this from somebody on my podcast years ago, where they were talking about really the key with this is transparency, right? When you have that gaps in the process, it's usually because there's not enough transparency. And either I always try to think positively, which is there's just not awareness. People don't know what they don't know. But there's also times where there's gaps and the transparency is not there because they're hiding something. They're hiding a metric. They're hiding something they don't want people to know or be aware of. And that's why it's so important to look at that data. And I think look at all the data. Now, here's what I will say is I've caught myself at times going too granular with the data. It's like Tuesdays at 2 p.m. we seem to close slightly less deals between 2 and 2:05. It's like, okay, this isn't like you can't control it that much. You got to look at a different level. But you've got to make sure you have enough detail so you can see these things. And I think one of the keys is when you're talking about this data and the tech and the operations and all of this stuff is to make sure you understand what game you're playing as far as the time frame. Some sales organizations, they're playing a daily game. How much you close today? Tomorrow is a whole new day. We start off in a new way. Some play a weekly game, monthly, quarterly, yearly game. And so you've got to know because you got to put those metrics because you could have a really bad day today, a great day tomorrow. And that's standard because maybe you set appointments today and you close them all tomorrow. And so you've got to understand that as well.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you. And I think, you know, when you do that, it really does kind of hammer things home. I think one of the things that I understand, for example, when there are, and to answer this question as well in a slightly different way, is, you know, having gaps in the process. Where does that become a responsibility of who? And one thing that I've noticed over the years is when people do find these gaps and when people do find an issue with the process for the sales numbers or whatever it might be, is they point fingers because nobody wants to take the blame, right? But my question to you in this is, how do you make sure you know where the responsibility lies in plugging these gaps?
That's a tough one because it, in my experience, it has to be somebody who owns the whole thing and that understands what those gaps mean to the business and to the clients, right? Again, the business is here, the clients are here, everything else is just process. So CEO, founder, president, chief executives at the top, looking at that. Because here's the thing, and this is what we all know, like, again, looking at it on the positive side, is a lot of people aren't doing it out of malicious intent where there's gaps in the process, gaps in the data. They just don't know. And a lot of times people are too close to the action. When you are in the trenches with your sales team or in your call center, you can't see all these things because you're just on fire and you're trying to help everyone just make it through the day and succeed. And so more and more, I put it higher and higher up in the org chart where they're flying at 10,000 feet, 15,000 feet, 30,000 feet, like 50,000 feet over the battlefield. And then they can look and go, oh, we've got a gap there. We've got an issue there. And so usually it's the people higher up have the visual, like they can see enough of what's going on. They can detect the gaps.
I like it. The reason why I ask is because I've had it proposed to me before that, is the gap in the process a gap in the management? And it's kind of like you look at something like that and you go, well, actually, do you know what? So it's a gap. It's a process gap caused by a gap somewhere. And it's just all of these things that eventually kind of stack on top of one another. And, you know, ultimately, like, you know, not who's to blame, because nobody likes to work in a blame culture. Nobody likes that. I mean, I worked for a company years ago that were, you are only as good as your last mistake. That's how they saw you in the company. And I was like, oh, okay, good to know. I like that.
I think the key is it a gap in the process, a gap in the leadership of the management? Yes. But you can't expect everyone to know everything. And what you're saying is if you have the right culture, everyone just wants to plug those gaps so you can just continue to win.
Oh, I think I'm muting myself by accident then. I'm back.
Cool.
Okay. So look, once we plug those gaps, we need to figure something out. Talking of a gap again, another segue into our next question. We're trying to get through these. We're not even halfway through the questions yet, and we're over halfway in our episode today. It's not falling apart, but we're on top of this thing. Is the next big question that really comes out of this is that there is a gap, is how clean is your data? Now, from a sales perspective, this is something that I love to talk about, and the reason why I love to talk about it is because we all know the saying, a bad workman blames his tools.
Yeah.
Can the same be said, in your opinion, Jason, when it comes to salespeople and data?
Well, and I think that is a great question. And we're going to do something new this week. We're going to take a quick break. Please tune in. We'll be back here shortly after this message from us.
Hey, it's Jason Cutter of Cutter and Cat. We'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success you want for them. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps from where you are now to where you'd like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's with training, systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything in between, email info@callcenterconfidence.com today, and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we might be able to help you. And now back to Oliver and I chatting about call centers.
All right, so where were we? Talking about how clean the data is and blaming tools and blaming the systems. I think that there's a lot of validity to that. When I hear about how clean is your data, part of it is the input from marketing or leads coming in and how accurate is that. And then how clean is your data? The other side of that is CRM input, right? It's fundamentally true across most landscapes that salespeople don't like entering into stuff into the CRM or into the system or into the technology. And then you have incomplete data. And then here's the biggest challenge is as a leader, you're trying to make decisions about what to do and how to strategize with your sales operation, but you're doing it on incomplete data, right? Yeah. You're doing it on, and this is one example, let's say phone call dispositions, left message, you know, spoke to them, send quote, whatever that looks like. If it's the first one in the list of any disposition or dropdown, that will generally be the highest selected one, which could lead you to believe like all these leads are garbage or all these leads are amazing because everyone yep. answered. And that's not effective or accurate. And that could lead to a lot of problems.
No, 100%. And I think one thing to look at is there are so many people out there that charge. So, I mean, data was what, the highest commodity last year or something, or the highest priced per volume. I mean, it was even I can't even speak today. I've not had enough coffee. It was a higher price than something like coffee, which is one of the largest inflation rates in the world. Look, I speak with a lot of data suppliers. I have a lot of good friends who are data suppliers, and I buy a lot of data for my clients. And that data varies in price from pennies per record to pounds per record. Is it always as good as what it says? No. But who can vouch for that? And I think your data is only as good as the people that are using it, right? What was it? One man's trash is another man's treasure. You could dial that call tomorrow and get nothing. Whereas I could call him next week right in the middle of something that's hit this person bad. And it'd be like, oh my God, save me. Like literally come in and save me. And I think, I hate to say data is luck because it's not luck. It's the skill of the person that's using it to their advantage as much as anything else, as well as timing, as well as placement. If you're buying intent data, that's something that's a little bit different because obviously this is usually intent data for those of you that don't know what intent data is. It's information that has been gathered on a company within the last week that they are searching for something specific based on about 8,500, 8,300-ish keywords that are used through search engines, IPs, and everything else. There's a lot of companies out there that supply intent data. One company who I won't mention, if you want any more advice, just give me and Jason a shout afterwards, that actually back-end a lot of data supplier platforms. And these things are pretty good. I've used intent data for some of my work, and it's landed on the money. Because they've been looking at the right time. I've dialed them at the right time. And thank you very much. It's worked out. Whereas if you're using a big organization to search for something, it's not always as accurate. And I think that's something that can be let down in certain areas like that. But what I will say, and jumping back around to the question, Your data is only as clean as you make it. As long as you are maintaining it, as long as you are updating it, it's not going to degrade. I know people that sell degraded data for pennies per record, but guess what? It's usually worthless. It's not worth the money it's printed on. It really isn't. So for me, when you are looking at data, make sure it is clean. Run it through whatever washing system you need to use. Talking to the UK market, you know, whether it's CPS and TTPS and CTPS and GDPR compliant, you know, there's a lot of rules around it, which is why it restricts a lot of data. But in the US, I mean, you've got some rules around data, probably less than what the UK has in place from what I'm led to believe. I don't know if that's true or not.
I would say that's probably not true. I think one of the things that makes it even more difficult, I would probably say in the US, is that we have 50 states and most of those states have different rules. So there's like the federal government, and then there Florida has its mini TCPA, and California has its GDPR equivalent just for California, and New York has a different rule, and New Jersey has a rule. And so all you have to know the federal and then all the states and then what those are. So that definitely gets challenging for sure. And I think, you know, keeping your data clean on the input is going to help the output. And then how clean is your data on the output, which is what are you getting from your salespeople? What do you have that's going into your reports? Because if it's not accurate, then you're going to be heading the wrong direction.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to go in the wrong direction, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so here's that out. No, not when you have a destination you'd like to get to. And we've all had our GPS go nuts or turn off. Now that I'll say most people are spoiled by just being able to plug in something into their phone and go. And when you lose connection or signal and you don't know where you're going because you've relied on it, then, you know, that's bad. So here's what I'm going to say is we are, you know, 3/4 of the way through our conversation here. We're through 5 of these items. And Alex put a really good comment into the chat. So I'm going to propose that we're going to go off on Alex's comment and talk about that, which I think is super important. And this is probably, I probably should have planned for this better, probably be a 2-part episode knowing us. So if you wanted to hear all 10 of them, probably not going to happen today because I don't want to rush through these because there's some really good ones on this that, you know, you should be able to answer that we will get to. And obviously, if you're impatient, you can message us. We'll give you our answers in advance if you just can't wait. Like if this is you and you need these now. So you all right with that, Oliver?
I'm good to go. I'm golden. I mean, not be funny. I think Alex's question is a big question that we definitely need to address.
Yeah. Why don't you run through that first and share? Because I know you have a lot of ideas when it comes to this, you know, speed to reporting and visibility.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So look, jumping on Alex's question is another big item. How visible is sales performance to the sales reps? Do they need to wait on a report or their sales manager to communicate performance? Look, I think that is a very valid question. I think it's something that a lot of people either hide behind or use up front. One of the best managers I've ever worked for would literally automate the stats. So when you came in the next morning, yesterday's performance was in front of you. So you knew where you stood. And the fact is, there was only one metric that they marked on the day, and they just wanted you to end a day on a certain conversion. They didn't care how many you got, how long you spent on the phone or anything like that. And the truth be told is you could work out your conversion rate based on the calls that you had and what was in the system. So you already kind of knew where you were at. But the manager that I worked for and this was one of my very first call center jobs. He set me on the road to this path. And he would literally pull out, and this is for all the sales reps on our team, all the management information. So the MI came out and literally was in our inbox when we arrived at shift the next day as a full-blown report. So you could see where you stood for the day yesterday, for the week, and for the month to date. And I think that was so important for us. And I think the reason why it was so important, and I think so many people don't share enough of this, is commission. We know that one of the biggest drivers of every sales rep out there is commission. And if you can show them roughly, now I'm not saying be accurate because you know, you may have clawbacks or you may have to withdraw some or something like that. But if you can physically show the money they are earning on the table there and then, or as close to there and then as possible, you will create more motivation. And the reason why I say that is one of the teams that I worked with probably about 6 months ago, a year ago, had, like most companies, stretch targets. So the minute you hit a certain number, every sale prior to that became, you know, an extra $3 or an extra $4 per sale. And then if you hit another 10 sales, it jumped up by another $5. But that was retrospective to every single one for the month. So what they would see is when they came in the next day, they went, well, hang on a minute. If I hit two more sales today, I know that retroactively, that's going to bump up my commission by $500 for the month, $1,000 for the month, $10,000 for the month, whatever it is. And that spurred these people on to say, well, do you know what? I just need to get this extra sale today or these extra two sales today to literally fill my boots. And look, Alex, I know this is a very long-winded way of answering your questions, but to go back to it and to answer those is it should be visible or as visible where possible. And no, they shouldn't have to wait on a report. Now, don't get me wrong. There are companies out there that do have to wait on reporting. Company that I worked for last year specifically sent out reports at the end of the week. I tried to advise them to push it out daily, but it was apparently too much work. That's all I'm going to say. but look, weekly is better than nothing. I will say that because it at least gives you some insight. But communicating performance is key, especially when it is in a motivational job like that. We know the lifespan of a sales rep is a lot shorter than somebody like a customer service or a tech support or, I don't know, some kind of collections agent or something like that. Because sales, it's just chance. You know, VPs of sales, managers of sales, CROs, lifespans vary between 12 to 24 months. If you can show them what they're making, show them what they're doing, show them their performance, I guarantee you probably keep them around longer. I'm sorry that's a long-winded answer. I hope I answered it as much as possible. But look, my simple answer is anybody who's listening, show your sales team performance as often as you can with commission attached. Sorry.
Right. No, don't be sorry. No, that was great. I am going to take a slightly different approach. Semi-disagree.
Love it.
And talk about what I focus on. So one of the biggest things that I look at when I look at sales operations is also what do other professionals do? In this case, if we look at sports, right? And again, I have to put in this caveat, which is depending on what kind of a center you're running and what level of salespeople you have, if they're, you know, hourly plus some bonuses and commissions, you can't expect them to be driven like a professional athlete to perform every day. However, what I will say is, like a professional on the field, like if we think of, you know, I'm going to use American football because, you know,
I'm still learning.
You know, if we look at that, players on the field, I'm going to guess based on the ones I've seen, is they know their stats. They know how many catches they have. They know how many times the ball has come to them. If they're a quarterback, they know how many times they've thrown it, how many times it went, you know, worked out, how many running plays. Like, they have all these stats in their head that aren't on the scoreboard. The scoreboard is just showing the ultimate, right? 14-0. But that player knows their stats. When the game is over, they know their stats. The people you want in your sales environment, in your call center, are the ones who are keeping track of their stats. They don't need you to tell them they made 100 phone calls and talked to 10 people and closed one deal, right? If that's news to them at the end of their day, then they're just going through the motions and they're just out of control, in my experience and opinion. versus somebody who goes, yeah, I based on my numbers, I made 100 calls. I talked to 10 people and I closed one deal. And they also know if that was a good day for them or not, because they know their historic stats and they know how they did last week and yesterday and what they normally do on a Wednesday or based on how many calls. Like, they know their stats, and what they're looking for is confirmation from the company to say, here's the report. Yes, this matches with what your experience is. Here's what you normally do. And here's some of the other stats that you might not see, like total talk time, average call talk time, right? Yeah. These other stats that they're not going to know easily, but they've got the other ones. And what I have seen is the people who are going to be more successful in sales. And again, this isn't just like giant six-figure salespeople in a call center, but, you know, hourly $10, $12, $15 an hour people with bonuses and commissions, is that they still know their stats. They know how many people they talk. Even if they're on a dialer, 600 dials a day, they know how many conversations they've had. They're keeping a tally mark. They know how many at-bats. They know how many quotes they've sent. And then they know how many deals they've closed. So that's not a surprise to the right people in the right culture that you want to build, in my experience. And then what I think is the reporting needs to be there all the time. Like, it needs to be there, let's say, at the end of every day or the start of the day, right? So like that professional sports example, which is everyone leaves the field. Everyone knows what the score was on the board, right? 14-0. We won. That's great. All the salespeople leave the office knowing I closed three or I didn't. I closed one. Wasn't a good day. They know that. And then there's the debrief afterwards. There's the numbers. There's the reports that say, here's the gritty details of what happened and why you did well or why you didn't do well. And I think that's super important, transparent. It's also a balance too, because sometimes if you give too many stats, people get lost in weeds. A lot of times if you have analytical people or people who aren't doing well on the sales team, they will look at the stats and then point to why they didn't do well and looking at excuses or you know, pointing the finger at, well, I didn't get as many leads as Bob and that's why I didn't do as well, right? Well, you also made 40 calls and Bob made 100 calls. So there's that. And so I think that's important. I think you've got to be careful not to have too many stats available all the time such that people are distracted by it. Just go play the game, right? Just go play the game. We don't need to look at the stats like when we're watching, when we all watch sports at home and we're seeing the player stats throughout the game. That's great. Yeah. For them, they should just be focused. Just play your game. And I think it's that balance.
Mic drop. Look, I think that is that's a fantastic approach to it. And I agree. I agree to an extent. I mean, look, having worked with thousands of call center reps over the past X amount of years, look, there are, I know I will agree to an extent, and I love it when we have different viewpoints and kind of agree and disagree on things. I've worked with a couple of handfuls of people in my lifetime, in my tenure of call centers, that are people like that. And these are the people that are going to grow. These are people that are going to advance. These are the people that are going to deliver time and time again. And these are going to be your heavy hitters, big commissions every month, walking away with the big bucks because that's their mindset. But on the other hand, I would say that percentage of sales rep in a call center is a small percentage of the overall people that we see in centers worldwide. Look, I would love to say that that is everyone. Look, if we could train every call center rep to do that between you and I, we would take over the world. And you know what? I think that's our monetization, people. If you're listening now and you want your reps to know every stat at the end of the day, come and see Jason and I, and we'll have a conversation about how we can show your call center something different. I agree. Look, I think that is a fantastic way to do it. And I think if we could get everybody in that mindset across the world, then do you know what? We'd see a completely different ballgame in sales. When it comes to the big enterprise sales, these people that are selling tech stacks, these people that are selling SaaS products, these people are doing enterprise sales left, right, and center. I think at that point, these people are definitely the people you're talking about right now, in my opinion. Right. Because I know a lot of, we both know a lot of these people that are friends of both of ours, and they know, you could ask them, literally say, hey, give me your numbers for the month. And they could just go and bash it straight out. But from a sales rep selling, I don't know, telecoms, phone and broadband, cars, maybe cars are on your page rather than this page. insurance, healthcare, Medicare. I don't think as many of them are where you are suggesting as where we would like to see them.
Yeah.
Pitch, that's where we can help.
Well, and I really think that comes down to not just the expectation, but the game that's being played, that manager who used to be in sales moved up, and then what they're encouraging everyone to do and supporting them on, right, is like, know your numbers. It's so important. And then there's something I don't, before I forget, before we wrap up today, is you had mentioned too, like these escalating bonus commission tiers, which is if you close two more deals, it's going retroactive and you've got these things. If you have any kind of compensation plan that's not just a one for one, you close one sale, I give you $15 or $100, whatever it looks like. If it's got some different rules in place as it goes up, then one of the biggest things, just a tip, is if however you can do it, get everybody a custom built spreadsheet on the sales team so they can enter in those things and then they can forecast it as well. I'm surprised every time when reps don't have this or they build their own little system instead of the company providing it and saying, here you go. This is your own calculator. This is not going to payroll, but this way you know where you stand and what you need to do and what it would look like if you got two more sales this month.
Yeah.
And just provide them the tools so that they can play the game you want them to play, which is you want them to close those two more sales.
Yeah. And that's it. Look, it boils down to one word that we've spoken about so many times, and that is just incentivization. Because when you incentivize your reps in this way, it's not the carrot and the stick mentality. It's literally the carrot mentality. You are dangling that carrot and you are getting them to walk towards it. And that's what it needs to be. And I think if you can get all of your reps singing that same tune, walking towards the carrot and knowing that the closer they get, the bigger that carrot's going to be, then that's all you need to do. And if you put the right incentives in place, you will have a very productive workforce.
All right. Well, I think this was a ton of value. I mean, I think it was. Hopefully you do as well. Hopefully people listening did. But I think the stuff that we approached on this, that was a success. I don't know why I thought we would get through 10 items in under an hour with you and I combined.
I was just going to say, with me and you behind the reins, Jason, that was never going to happen.
I know. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm saying this too, is like, if I did a solo episode or you did a solo episode, I don't even think I could get through all 10 just talking to myself into the microphone. Cause I know me. And so my strength isn't the brevity and just throwing out, you know, little bombs and, you know, hoping that's enough. It's not my strong suit.
No. Exactly. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, look, thank you very much for tuning in for part one of our sales ops leadership piece. Five more questions to go next week that we're going to be coming at you. And trust me, they're going to be good. We'll get through them as quickly as possible. Thank you to every single person that's commented today, liked, thought, shared, and been involved in today's episode. We've got people everywhere, all over LinkedIn watching today. We've got people tuning in from Facebook. I'm looking on our analytics where we have people from the US, from the UK, South Africa, China. Is peaking high, apparently. I didn't mean to say that, but that came out. but we got China in there today. So that's definitely a new one. 10 viewers from China. So it looks like we're hitting the right place. Look, in the meantime, guys, don't forget, jump on our socials, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. Next week, Jason, I think we're going to try it. We'll test it this week. We'll try and do a live stream on Instagram as well of this episode next week. And don't forget, you can contact us at info@callcenterconfidence.com. And if you want to sign up for live reminders, then you need to go to luma.ma/ Call Center Confidence. Sign up for email notifications and you'll get the link directly to our website emailed to you without even having to think about it. It's that simple. But Jason, as always, I appreciate you. Thank you very much for dropping those bombs today. Been very insightful. And that's it from me. And we will see you next week. Any closing thoughts from you, Jason?
One thing is that as we shift here soon, we're going to start bringing in other people into the Call Center Confidence episodes on a weekly basis. Visitors, guests, experts, industry experts, people who are struggling in a call center and you want to just be put on the hot seat and get some advice, and we'll talk about what would help you succeed. So make sure to reach out to us. Find us the callcenterconfidence.com page. Also, make sure you're on our email list. So that when we have that calendar set up, which we do, we'll broadcast that. We'll send that out. We'll also post it. Make sure you're following us on social so that you can find out how to be a part of this each week. So that's it for now. Appreciate it. Thanks, Oliver. And we'll catch everyone next week.
Bye, guys.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.